You're listening to Freed on Business. To talk to Jim and his guests, call 305-541-2350. That's 305-541-2350. Now, back to your host, Jim Freed.
All right, we're on, and we went to the ICSC, the International Council of Shopping Centers event last week, learned all about the retail industry here in Florida. Now I've got my good friend Todd Laurie. He's based up in Denver, Colorado, and we're going to talk about the overall retail business. He's with one of the family offices. He's buying grocery-anchored shopping centers. Everybody tells me that business is dead. Todd tells me it's not. Todd, how you doing?
Jim, it's a real pleasure to be with you today. Thanks so much for the invitation.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Listen, Todd, before we get started, tell people a little bit about you and your firm so they get a feel for where you're coming from.
You got it. So Baseline Investments is a manager and sponsor of retail investments that focus on neighborhood and community shopping centers scattered throughout the central U.S. Today, we own and operate 55 shopping centers that focus on everyday goods and services.
So you made a real point of emphasizing everyday goods and services. Now, down here in South Florida, we've had people build what I call pro forma shopping centers back in the 70s and 80s, where they built like 200,000, 300,000 square feet. They built a grocery store and a bunch of what I call pro forma space. Who used to go in there? The Hallmark store used to go in there. All kinds of different retailers that are no longer with us used to go in there. So if you're buying grocery anchored centers, what is the perspective that you're using? What type of a retail center would you look for? What would your criteria be? Or do you just buy anything?
No, that's a really great question, Jim. So we have a strong bias towards the shopping centers that are anywhere from, say, 20,000 to 100,000 square feet. And they might or might not actually have a grocery anchor as part of that shopping center. But primarily, the operators or the businesses that are located in those shopping centers focus on, as I said, the everyday goods and services that people use on a regular basis, irrespective of what's going on in the economy. And it doesn't lend itself to e-commerce types of outlets. So there are nail salons, hair salons. You can't get your hair cut online yet. They may be dry cleaner drop-offs. There's lots of cell phone PCS types of businesses. And now we see a lot of medical use going into these shopping centers as well, because dentists and chiropractors and ophthalmologists want to be close to the neighborhoods where our centers are located.
So then let me ask you this. If you don't need a grocery store, some of the centers that I'm seeing are anchored by tech colleges, good credit gyms, and soft good marketers that sell clothes to people that maybe get paid in cash.
Yeah, you've got it exactly. So what it is are the discount durable good retailers, dollar stores, or discount clothing stores tend to be very profitable and very successful in these shopping centers. And we don't necessarily need to, as you pointed out, have a grocery anchor, but fitness centers are key. And again, those dollar stores can be really solid anchors for a shopping center as well.
So then let's just get straight to it. So now you go out, you find one of these deals, you got to bring it to a financing. You're buying these all cash? No, you're using leverage, right?
Yes, we use leverage today, yeah.
Okay.
We've had a series of unleveraged funds in the past, and those have worked out very, very well. But we recently changed over on our current fund to using some prudent level of leverage in order to get a little higher return for our investors.
Yeah, it sounds to me like that's the way to go sometimes, but the fact that you had the all-cash ability, and was it discretionary funds? Listen to me asking all the questions. If it was discretionary, that allowed you to move fast, which meant you could get good deals, right?
Absolutely. Fortunately, because we've got a long operating history, Baseline has a very flexible enterprise-level facility that's in place. And I don't know if I can plug the bank or not.
Yes.
But we have a national bank that's its key bank is the third largest provider of REIT structured debt in the U.S., and they've put together a really fantastic financing facility for us. So even though we have the debt that we're using at closing, we're able to pull the trigger and close on properties very quickly.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions, but you might as well follow all the way through which office at KeyBank and who's your guy or lady.
Yeah, so our guy is Joshua Mayers out of the Cleveland office of KeyBank.
Wow. Well, it sounds like he gives you great service. So high five to Josh for that. So let's go back to it then, Todd. So now let's say that you found one of these deals. You've got KeyBank is there for you. You guys are bringing the equity. You're going to close. What's one of the big due diligence points that you look for on one of these deals?
You know, it's interesting because there really are a myriad of factors. One of the things that Baseline does that's, I think, distinctive relative to other firms and other people when they buy real estate is our due diligence team goes out personally and interviews every tenant at the shopping center. A lot of operators will only interview a large tenant or a couple of tenants at a property. And we go out and schedule time to talk with every tenant. You find out a lot of information about a property by going through that process. You find out about any mechanical issues or facade issues with the property. You find out about tenants that don't pick up their trash or are doing funky things in the back of the property. And you find out about businesses that, although may have been reported as doing well, that the owner really isn't happy and may be looking to move or is underperforming and not meeting the sales expectations that they have. So that when we get through to the end of the due diligence process, we have a very solid idea of what expenses are going to need to be put into the property in order to get it up to our standards. We have a very good idea of how the tenants are performing and which tenants are going to be renewing or which tenants we're going to need to replace during the hold period.
Let me tell you, one of the things that I find about that is that you're interviewing your customers, because when you buy that shopping center, the people that you have to create a good environment for are not only the people that come to those tenants, but the tenants themselves. With a bunch of bad tenants doing bad business, you're not going to get anybody coming to that center.
It's important to remember that, you know, as a firm that's a sponsor and a manager of these types of investments, we have multiple customers. We have our investors, of course, but you're absolutely right. The tenants are a primary customer for us, and we have to establish good relationships with those folks and be a good landlord for them, because we want them to be successful in their business so that we can increase their rents as they're increasing their sales. And we want them to renew their leases at higher rates when those leases come up for renewal.
Fair enough. Well, that's a real value-add strategy, as we like to say in the business. Hey, Todd, we got to go to a break. Can you hang out and do another segment? This is good stuff.
Oh, I'd love to. Thanks, Jim.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Wanda, do some magic. We're going to come back with Todd. I want to ask him what the changes in retail, Amazon, all that other stuff. We talked a little bit about it before, but maybe there's some certain centers that are better positioned to look a little better, take advantage or to be disadvantaged by that. So, Todd, I gave you a little soft warm-up, and we'll be right back with some more Todd Lorre and what's up with the retail sector in real estate today. Wanda.